Welcome to ACN.
Williams, and I'm here with my co-host and sister, Ronnie. Hey, Ronnie.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Oh, wonderful. It's good. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy I'm you're
excited
here.
Excited tonight.
Were you jamming to that song?
Yes. I was. It caught me off guard, though. Sounds like a new hit.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So I don't know. We'll have to ask Jerome what it is because, of course, that was Jerome's creation.
Master mix.
Yes. Thanks, Jerome. Hey, where are you? We're waiting on you. Can't wait to talk to you. So anyway, how was your week today, this week, Ron?
It was really good. The weather was a little dicey. So,
it was up and down, right?
Hmm?
Like, I said it was up and down. It's like, what's with the weather? Like, one day it's 50 degrees, the next day it's snowing. And
right.
The next day it's all melted all over the place. I'm like, oh.
I know. Well, it was a slush mesh marsh, and then, I got chicken. I feel really bad because I got chicken. I decided I'm over the snow. So I hid out. I hid out in the burrow.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I hid in the burrow because I said, the people in the burrows don't get smoshed like we do. And so I said, I'm staying with the burrows. Why should I go and be snowed under and iced in and all that? And so I finally made it back home today, and there wasn't any ice.
Oh, good. So the snow is going back.
Yeah, so I was really, I felt kind of guilty and I felt kind of like good because I didn't want to be bothered. I know, and I sound like a wimp now.
Yeah, you do. You do. Because you were like, Miss, I'm riding through the mountains. I didn't know, I didn't recognize who you were driving up and down mountains in snow-capped mountains.
Snow-capped
like,
mountains,
snow
77 queen. Feet of snow on a daily.
Just ride
and
up,
I get
ride.
Over here and 5 inches, and I'm just,
you, won't go
you know, snowstruck. But the difference is,
right,
huh? I know. What I think the difference is, and I know this is even going to sound even more lame, but the difference is that your snow here is not fun.
Oh, see, we need
yeah.
fun.
You have to have fun snow. There's a difference. Not that that driving in that other crazy snow was crazy. Yeah. But here, it's just a mess. It's just a mess. You know, we had constant plowing, where here you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, it's a city, you see.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. Where was that you all were? The Himalayas of the Himalayas.
Yeah, the Himalayas.
Yeah, you were like at the top of a mountain skiing and, you know, what?
Himalayan. Exactly. So it was place snow, so, you know. But anyway, all of that, it was a really, really good week, and yesterday was epic. The weather was so sweet. It was just great.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice out. It wasn't too bad out today either.
It was nice, too. It just got a little cold now.
Yeah. But I'm glad you had a great week, and I wanted to send a shout-out to Nico. I see she's here listening on the line. Hey, Nico, hope you're doing great. It's nice to have you here. And everybody who happens to be listening right now, thank you for joining us on Professional Style tonight. We're going to go over just a few things because we haven't talked to Ronnie in a little bit, so we're going to talk about a few things, and then we'll be welcoming our guests in just a few minutes. So we'll talk about that in a second. So, Ronnie, how about we take a quick break real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about some of the things that we missed over the last couple of weeks. How about that?
Wonderful.
Okay.
I'll be here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Professional Style. And if you'd like to call in and talk with us, the number is 909-265-9189. Hit us up on your phone, or you can tune in on the internet at blogtalkradio.com/Kathleen Williams, Kathleen-Williams, and you can listen in online. Join us if you want to talk to us. Press 1 when you call in, and we will join you into the conversation. And right now we're going to take a really quick news break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome to Esprinet News 90-Second News Break. Congress formally certified that President Barack Obama and Vice President Biden were the winners of November's election with 332 electoral votes. It was mostly ceremonial, yet constitutionally necessary. The final totals were the president, 66 million, or 51.1%. MSNBC reported a huge increase in their overall ratings due to the elections and black viewership. The network announced an increase of black viewers by 60.5%. CNN's black audience increased by 23.7%, while Fox decreased by that same number. As a result, black viewers only make up 1.4% of Fox regular viewership. Concord, Massachusetts has banned the sale of bottled water in units smaller than 1 liter. The law came into effect on January 1st after a 3-year campaign to reduce the waste and encourage tap water use. First offenders will get a warning, second time $25, next time $50. More than 90 universities in the U.S. and others around the world have done the same. Debbie Morgan is returning to daytime soaps. The actress announced that she was reprising her role as Dr. Angie Hubbard on All My Children, that's Resurrected Online. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for Esprinet News on ACN.
Kevin, now that you're in eighth grade, let's not talk about alcohol. You've got a lot going on, sports, homework, so I'm sure you haven't noticed where we keep the alcohol in the house. When you hang out with your friends, I know how innocent it is. You play video games, watch educational TV programs. Besides, you're too smart to have friends who drink. By the time you reach high school, trying to be cool and fit in will be the last thing on your mind. You'll be focused on getting into my alma mater, not experimenting with drinking. So don't worry. I won't ask you if you've tried alcohol or what you're doing when you sleep over a friend's house. I mean, you're too young to even think about stuff like drinking. Right, kiddo?
Real kids are curious about alcohol. 40% try it by the 8th grade. Start a real conversation at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Talk early, talk often, get others involved. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I want to see more serious political consultations starting to happen.
I want corporations out of the government, and I want people back in.
I want peace rather than militarization.
I want the top wealthiest Americans to be taxed higher and that money to go to education.
I want economic justice.
I want to be able to speak my voice without jeopardizing my job.
I want a greater regulation of the banks and the market.
I want my kids to have a job and health care.
I want true democracy for the 99% of us who don't have it anymore.
Winning 2 Olympic gold medals for Team USA still doesn't feel real to me. Achieving my dream feels like a dream. I hope I can inspire people to take AT&T's pledge to never text and drive. My reason to pledge is for both of my families, my host family and my family at home. Find your reason and take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. It can wait. Take the pledge now at itcanwait.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to Professional Style. I'm your host, Kathleen Williams. I'm here with my co-host, Ronnie. And Ronnie, our guest, I believe, is here. So maybe we'll talk with her, and then we'll, you know, do our updates a little bit afterwards.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Okay, great. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so glad that you're here tonight to talk with us, to listen to us talking with Ms. Bernadette J. Dantley. She is an educator extraordinaire, and she has done some incredible things in the field of education. Let me see. She's got several areas of expertise, among them training and motivation and student engagement and several other things. So we're going to talk to her and have her tell us all about who she is and what she does, because I'm very impressed, and I'm really excited about listening to some of the many things that she's done to help students. So if you have children at home or children in your family that, you know, even if you don't think they need a little extra help, they need this information. If they're going on to college, they're going to be taking any kind of, you know, standardized tests, et cetera. This is the show that you want to listen to. So I want to take a moment now to welcome into Professional Style Ms. Bernadette Dantley. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Kathleen.
Well, so, Bernadette, thank you for being here, and I'm excited about the work that you've done. This is an area of great interest to me, something that I've really been pretty passionate about. And so why don't we just start out with you telling the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go right into your work, and we'll talk a lot about your latest book.
Okay. Well, currently I'm a professor at Prince George's Community College, full-time, and the Developmental Mathematics Department. I've done several workshops on student engagement and critical thinking, and I have a background in engineering with an emphasis in mathematics. That was my undergraduate, and my graduate degree is in curriculum development and instructions. As early as 16, I started a tutorial program, and that's where I started thinking about critical thinking and the reasoning of our youth. Yeah, I know. And as I'm teaching currently in Prince George's Community College, I run across thousands of students. And I'm looking at their reasoning, and especially the anxieties that are imposed when they are learning math, which is the subject area I teach. I started really focusing
on critical thinking as I homeschooled my young men who are now grown men. And I was thinking about those mothers, those parents, those aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins, siblings that just didn't have the tools that they needed to help develop critical thinking skills in the young people. And so that's what started the wheel turning when it comes to my new publication, Answers Without Penalty, Developing the Young Critical Thinker.
Okay, so you have two sons, you said?
I have three, actually.
You have three sons, and you homeschooled all?
Yes, at various ages. I started sixth grade, and then I pulled all of them out at the same time. Actually, my oldest son was in the eighth grade, my next son was in the seventh grade, and my youngest son was in the sixth grade.
Okay, so I think I'm going to, let me start there a little bit and ask, did homeschooling them guide you into the field that you're in now? Because I noticed you said your undergrad was in engineering, so you kind of made a shift over into this area. Or what got you into, you know, critical thinking?
Education.
Yeah.
Oh, critical thinking has always been something that I thought about even as a young child. But because I actually ventured into mathematics, that's when, and I was, you know, I encountered so many students, that's when I really started putting my foot forth and trying to better understand critical thinking and how we can help them, because this is definitely needed in preparation for the SAT, which I've done extensive work with the SAT.
Right, right. So, and you noticed, what were you seeing with the kids as far as, like, you know, they're not doing so well in math, and what were you noticing, if you could be more specific about that?
Well, one thing I was noticing, prior to the critical thinking, the one thing I was noticing is they didn't understand the test and how they were being graded. And then my goal was to try to help them to get that score that they needed. And a lot of times I dealt with a lot of athletes, and this was prior to the test being changed, modified, and adding the writing component. But prior to that, my goal was to try to increase overall scores of our schools, of the school that I was actually working at, and how to do that. And doing that, I had to think of critical thinking strategies to do that.
So not just standardized tests and just standardized tests in general, or SAT in particular?
SAT in particular, because the thought process in the SAT is quite different from the ACT. There's more critical thought in the SAT than the ACT. ACT is pretty much straightforward. The SAT is more reasoning involved.
Yeah. So just for everybody listening, if they're unfamiliar with SAT and ACT, let them know what those exams are.
Okay, the SAT, Scholastic Achievement Aptitude Test, and that's basically what we use, what a lot of colleges use to determine whether a student, for interest in a college. Community colleges normally don't use it as much as your universities and your four-year colleges. The ACT is actually a standardized test that's also being used, but more emphasis to me appears to be on the SAT than the ACT.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And for anybody, like, I didn't realize that they didn't use it as much for the community colleges as they do for the 4 years, but basically it's not a requirement to get out of high school, but if any student is going to college, that's the first thing they're going to be faced with is, you know, when are you taking the SAT? You know, what did you get on the SAT? How did you do on the SAT? What course are you going to take for the SAT? That was, like, the biggest thing was coming out of college, and when my son was also, SAT, SAT.
You're right, Kathleen. The community college, a lot of community colleges, and I think this is even extended to some of the four-year college and universities, we're using the AccuFlacer to place out students. I mean, if they have a high score, a decent score on the SAT, they can actually forego the placement test, but we're using a placement test to actually put out students in the correct, appropriate placements, appropriate classes.
Right. And the SAT many times will determine what college the student can go to based on what grade they get on that exam.
What the score? That's right. What the score that they achieve on the SAT is definitely an indicator as to what colleges will accept and what colleges will not. Although
that's right.
We still have not had any research to say that the SAT predicts success.
Thank you.
Yes.
Wait, where is it at? Hold on, everybody. I want you to say that one more time, please. Go ahead.
Although research has not proven that the SAT is an indicator of success, what I have concluded about students who do not do as well as other students on SAT is not that they won't succeed. They may need additional help in succeeding. That's simple.
And I'm so glad that you said that. So, and ladies and gentlemen, what if you didn't hear that, Bernadette just said that there are – did you say there's no research, no conclusive
no
research?
No research, right, exactly.
No conclusive research to prove that the SAT is an indicator of success in college or in life. I had to throw that in there. I didn't mean to do it twice, but I just think that's so key because a lot of times that is what our children are led to believe and what parents are led to believe as well. And then the other part about that, Bernadette, that I really like is that for the student that goes into the SAT unprepared and really prepared, because what I learned is that, or what I believe, and you tell me how you feel about this, is that there is it's an acquired skill. There's an acquired skill set to taking standardized tests, and to me it seems like the SAT is not very different. If you have adequate preparation and understanding, you can do very well on it. But absent that,
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Kathleen. In my research, my studies of the SAT, there is a way to prepare for the SAT, and some students just want to answer every question, which is not to their benefit because you're penalized for wrong answers. One thing that I did focus on when I was actually teaching in the high schools is there are five levels of difficulty on the SAT. There are enough, and my emphasis were on athletes, and at that time the test had not been modified. So their target goal, Division I students who had a C average, their target goal at that time was 820. And so my emphasis for them was to just look at the easier questions, the level one and two. There were enough level one and two questions on the SAT that will get them that 820 that they needed. And so I had to help them identify those type of questions, which are normally found in the beginning.
What? Where were you when I was taking the SAT? I did not know that.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I didn't either. Until I studied it extensively. Yes.
So
they could, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, they could actually just tackle levels 1, 2, and 3 and wind up with a 500 on the math component of the SAT.
Wow. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. And the other thing, too, which was, you are penalized for wrong answers, and a lot of students didn't know that. I think a lot of these things too. Fortunately, I was, and when I took the S, well, never mind. We won't talk about that. But anyway, yeah.
Mine either. Let's not talk about that.
We won't talk about that. I was fortunate though, because I was one that had at those times I was doing really well on standardized tests, but there were a lot of secrets, I thought, the tricks and secrets that a lot of students just didn't have. And,
that's true.
Many of them were, as I saw later going on and watching a lot of the kids coming behind me taking those exams, they didn't know that, hey, if you don't know the question, better you skip it than try to answer it and get it wrong, and just train to think that success means answering as many questions as possible, and then you just get, you get graded on all of them, and the percentages, blah, 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 but that's totally the opposite for the SAT. So for, anybody listening, and you have children who are going to do this, you really want to get with Bernadette to talk more about this. So let's move on a little bit to your book about critical thinking. This is really phenomenal. So tell us again the title of your book, which I love.
Okay. Well, the title of the book is called Answers Without Penalty, Developing the Young Critical Thinker. We right. have to start young. We really do have to start very young in helping out our children develop critical thinking skills. And I'll tell you this, which may be also connected to the SAT scores and the gap between African Americans and Caucasians, may be within the parenting styles. And so even when using my book, you have to be really careful of your parenting style, because if you are authoritarian, and I'll tell you there are two that I'm going to talk about, authoritative and authoritarian. If you are authoritarian, and both of them, you know, you definitely make note that you are the one with the rights. I mean, for the most part, you are the leader of the home. Okay, so both of those parenting styles establish that. However, the authoritarian does not let up, meaning it does not give the child room to ask questions. That particular parenting style is do what I say, don't ask me anything. And see, that's where you are stunting the child's cognitive development.
So the parenting, the one that says do as I say, not as I do, don't ask me any questions, just kind of get it done.
Just do it. You know, it's strictly obedience. Now, both of them want obedience. However, the authoritative parenting styles is obedience with questions. They will allow the child to question them. And see, that is developing their cognitive skills.
Right.
So there was a delay. If you're an authoritarian parent, if you're using authoritarian parenting styles, you are delaying your child's cognitive development.
Here we go. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Bernadette Dantley here on Professional Style. I'm your host, Kathleen Williams, and here with my co-host, my sister, Ronnie. She's here listening quietly. And so, Ronnie, we want you to jump in anytime. We are going to take a really quick break, Bernadette. We've got to pay some bills here. We're going to take a very quick break and come back and jump all over this topic. The differences in culture, race, and authoritative styles because, we're going to be right back. So if you want to call in and ask a question of our host of our guest or talk with us, if you have any kind of a question around this topic that you want to bring to the table, the call-in number is 909-265-9189. Press 1 when you jump on the line, and we'll bring you in so you can ask a question. But right now we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
There are so many fun things we all can do to be healthier, no matter who you are or where you are. So let's move.
Well, here we go. We've got something underway.
Let's stretch in the grass.
Great play.
Let's play tag.
What a play.
Let's jump up and down.
Oh, what a way to finish it.
And most of all, let's eat better so that we have the energy we need to play an hour a day every day.
Everyone can play. Just go to letsmove.gov to learn more.
Oh, those boys are much too much. Those boys are much too much.
We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We're going to beat them and bust them.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call or visit fatherhood.gov to learn more.
Mom, can I have a dollar?
Yeah, that's right. I think my purse is upstairs on the bed.
Not here.
Check the dining room.
No.
What about your sister's room?
Not here.
The upstairs closet?
The downstairs closet.
There are no more closets.
Moms everywhere are finding ways to keep kids active and healthy. Get ideas, get involved, get going at letsmove.gov.
Thank you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Professional Style. Here is my co-host, Ronnie Hickey. Hey, Ron. I don't know if I'm live yet. And we are talking with author, trainer, motivator, and critical thinker, Bernard Bentley, and she's talking to us about her latest book. And this developing young thinker, listen, this is really important information and incredible information for your children, your nephews, nieces, whatever, anyone going through the educational system right now. This is most important. And now, when we left before the break, Bernadette, you were just getting ready to start talking about the different parenting styles and how those parenting styles can affect the mind of the student and the young critical thinker. And also, we were going to talk a little bit about race as well. But go right ahead again with the authoritative, the one that is encouraging, the authoritative versus authoritarian.
Authoritarian, yes. Authoritative is quite encouraging. Like I said, both of those parenting styles, they, you know, acknowledge their authority, you know, in the household. However, the authoritative parenting style allows the child to express, you know, that verbal give and take. You know, they welcome that. They want an independent child, and therefore they explain to the children why things are happening, why you shouldn't behave that way, what are the consequences. And so there's a dialogue between parent and child, where the authoritarian parenting style is not so accepting of verbal exchange. It's do as I say and without an explanation. So we, in a sense, we delay that cognitive development, and that may be the reason for the gap in the SAT, because we are delayed, especially in the African-American household, where authoritarian style is used extensively. That may be one of the reasons why there is that gap.
Okay. So, all right. So if I hear what – If I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that in the African-American household, the parenting style tends to be more authoritarian, which is the kind of the dictator kind of do what I say and we're not even going to talk about it, boy, or the versus the authoritative, which is, yes, I'm in control, but here's why I need you to do this. Here's how I want you to understand what I'm telling you so that you have, you know, you have some, you understand what you're about to do. We're going to have a little dialogue.
Exactly.
About it. Right. So
exactly.
And are you also saying, are you also saying that the authoritative life, the authoritative parenting style is more prevalent in the not, you know, I would say white, not
exactly.
African.
Exactly, yeah, definitely. And you can understand why the African-American household has accepted this type of parenting style, because safety was very important to us. Protecting
totally.
Our kids was very important to us, and it's still very important to us. So this makes sure that you do what I say.
And do it.
It served as a protection mechanism.
That's right, because we don't want you to get beat, shot, whatever.
Exactly, exactly. So there was a reason behind it.
That's right. So okay. So if that's the case, there's so many different directions to go in this, and I want to stay as close to the topic as possible. But if that's the case, then are you then saying that the need for safety and protection is not so much what it was before, so we can ease up, we can back up off of that lifestyle a little bit, that parenting style a little bit, and be more authoritative? Are you saying that?
Kathleen, I would dare not say that. But what I will say, that there has to be some balancing.
Okay.
Where it will not, well, it will help our children as opposed to hinder our children. But I would definitely not say that we are totally safe. I think that, no, I can't say that.
Okay. And another thing that comes up for me when you mention the authoritative lifestyle, I keep saying lifestyle, the authoritative parenting style, is that I often hear, and I'm not raising my hand that I'm guilty of this, I'm just going to say that I often hear African-American parents making fun of white parents who say, okay, now, Johnny, now we don't want you to kick that lady in the bottom now. We want to give you a little time out, Johnny, now. Just now, come, now, Johnny, did mommy just say, you know, and we would, and we're standing like, and that was what, if that was my child, or if that was my mother's child, that boy would be, you know, whatever, 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 whatever. That's a running joke in the black community.
Well, yes, I understand that. I've had my times too, and that's the way I do things prior to getting more information. Her reasoning with Johnny is helping Johnny cognitively.
Okay. I'm just digesting this a little bit, because sometimes we think that that's making Johnny a brat.
Balance, you know, Kathleen, there is no one right way.
Right.
There has to be balance in everything that we do.
Right.
But
think about when your child goes to school. I have to jump in now. I was quiet, and I'd like to introduce myself. I'm so impressed, and thank you for coming on the show. I'm Kathleen's sister, Ronnie, her co-host.
Hi, Ronnie.
And we go to school, and the teachers don't have any time to reason with the African-American children. They don't. I went to We all went to school, and you know. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say you know. But we went to school, I went to school predominantly Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
Teaches my whole life, and they had a different way of communicating and handling the African American student versus the white student. It was just different, and they therefore, you know, we get that we better sit down, we better shut up, we better not make any, because they're going to call your parent, and that's going to be, then you're going to get suspended, and this and that and the other. So, therefore, your parent has to have that hard, heavy hand as well.
Exactly.
You know, if
and,
you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ronnie. Go ahead.
I've been having this conversation today, with my daughter, whose daughter is about to graduate from high school. And if anybody remembers or has had any recent contact with teenagers, you know, the days. There are days when teenagers, life expectancy is very short.
Yes. I definitely understand. And Ronnie, that's why I said the authoritarian parenting style was there for a reason. We use that for a reason. It was for our children's protection, safety.
Yeah.
Now we can make those changes. Because I think our parents we're a little bit more aware.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot more information that's out there for us. We've got therapists in the world, not that we necessarily make use of them, but we do understand a little bit better now, and we're able to connect, you know, emotionally. So I was speaking with my daughter who's, you know, having a little issue. I have to put her business out there, but, you know, with her daughter. And I said, you know, she's having a time right now. We can both connect with what she's going through, getting ready to graduate from high school. You could be a little bit fearful. You don't know what the next, you know, part of your life is going to bring, things like that. You're a little unsure, a little, you know, self-conscious, a lot of different things.
Right.
And I mentioned to her, I said, listen, why don't you find out the underlying issues of why she's, you know, acting out a little bit. And then I just asked her, you know, why are you acting out? Do you have some resentment that we can discuss so that if you do have some resentments before something really, really terrible happens, we can get those out in the open and maybe do something about it. And my daughter was saying, she's going to do what I say now. You know, I tried that. She's going to do. I said, listen, sometimes you have to realize that it's not always about you.
Yes.
This is what I'm trying, you know, I had to click in because it's so good to hear you saying that. You know, we always made those jokes because our parents treated us that way, but now we have to understand that our children are going out into that world and they have to know how to protect themselves in a different way.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
not always about you've got to listen to me. Yes, you've got to listen to me, but I've got to listen to you too so that I can understand what is really, really the underlying issues, and maybe we can dissect those and get those to the surface, and then we can move on, and then you can have success.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's really
that's definitely
good, Bronnie. So that's an example of you teaching her to be authoritative, and right, and that's
yes.
interesting. Because it tends to be the opposite, right? It tends to
yes.
be the next generation who's looking at being more authoritarian. And is that right? The, no, we're being more
no,
authoritarian.
The,
and the next
right.
generation is more authoritative.
Being more authoritative. Right, exactly. Exactly.
And so we're looking at a little bit at the reverse. And I'm joining Ronnie, too, Bernadette, in saying that this is a really great conversation to have, because, especially when you look at it around the races, you know, because
right.
again, like I was saying, that this is the running joke. It's like, look, we're not talking. We're
right.
not talking about this. You're gonna
exactly,
do this,
yeah.
You know, get that grade, or we're gonna take this away from you, or you're gonna are you gonna get up out of my house? You know, whatever it was.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, and that was kind of that was kind of the. You know, that was just
the norm.
That was the flow. You know, and one
yeah,
eyeball
yeah.
look at you, and you knew not to do. You know, and so and that
exactly.
and it wasn't before. So it wasn't just with the, you know, just the general conversation about what's causing, you know, certain behavior problems or whatever. But like you're saying, it's totally directly related to the critical thinking. So I'd like for you to talk a little bit more about that.
Okay. Well, basically, the book Answers Without Penalty, Developing a Critical Thinker, is for parents, guardians, anyone with young children, and the book is actually probably catered towards young people as young as three. I've heard people say that their child can speak at two, and I'll tell you why speaking is so important, because this book is not just about choosing. It's about letting the child choose and respond. So we need to know what the child is thinking so we know how to direct the child. And whatever the child says, it's nothing wrong with it. That's why it's answers without penalty. We need to allow our children to respond without frowning on their response.
Oh, boy.
And
now you're really talking dirty. Okay, go ahead.
and remember, I'm talking at young age right now. I'm talking young age because we're trying to develop that critical thinking skill. We start at a very young age telling them, no, that's not right. You can't do that. Now, I'm not talking about things where that's going to danger their lives. Okay,
right.
I'm talking about a thought process.
Right.
And this is where it has to start because, believe it or not, incorrect answers is what has gotten us to these advancements in the medical field. You know, incorrect answers have gotten these technology advances. So it's nothing wrong with incorrect answers.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's part of the critical thinking process, to determine whether something is the best way or not so good or totally not good. So when we tell our kids they have to be right all the time, we actually stunt the critical thinking process.
Yeah, listen, you better preach. And the other part of that, too, is by making anyone, and especially our children, telling them that, you know, to get an answer that's not the answer that you expect.
Yes.
Something wrong. We lead them to not being able, I don't even know how to say this grammatically, but they were unable to deal with failure. You know, and they think that failure is wrong. But like you're saying, if but for failure, Einstein would have never accomplished what
exactly.
he accomplished.
Exactly. We're on the same page.
Exactly. So they definitely, they have to be able to say, oh, okay, this wasn't, well, let me try it this way. Well, let me try it that way. You know, mediation, being able to just hang in there with stuff instead of saying, oh, man, I can't do this. I'm out.
Exactly, exactly. I'll tell you, the book is really important, and I'll tell you that it's also important that the parents play the role they're supposed to play. If indeed in those very early years, let's say infancy to 18 months, if that trust has not been built by that parent, before they even implement this book that I've written, they're going to have to rebuild that trust, because the child has to understand that they can trust their parents to do whatever, to say whatever. If the parent has often frowned at them, then you're not going to get that relationship that is needed to help develop those cognitive skills. So there are a lot of things that I want to tell parents that they have to do. First of all, go look in the mirror and look at the faces that you make, because some of those faces you make without even realizing it, and that's going to hurt the child in developing the critical thinking skills. And so my book is not going to be any good to you.
Yeah.
You have to be able to go through these activities, which you're going to facilitate, because the child doesn't facilitate it at all. You are the parent. It's going to help. I'll tell you some of the pluses. It's going to help strengthen that bond between parent and child. And that's one of the things. It's going to help develop the critical thinking skills. So you have to make sure that your facial expression is one of encouragement, that whatever that child says and whatever reason that child gives, that you are encouraging that child. And then I have instructions and directions for you to help her or help him or her to look at things another way, without penalty, right. Of course. Remember, the answer is without penalty.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are listening. We are talking with Bernadette Dantley, the author of Answers Without Penalty, Developing the Young Critical Thinker, and this book came out in 2012. I want you to pick it up. You're listening right now to Professional Style. I'm your host, Kathleen Williams. I'm here with my co-host, and we're having a most powerful and very important conversation with author Bernadette Dantley. We are going to take another very, very, very quick break, and then, Bernadette, I have some really important questions I want to ask you when we get back.
Okay.
And I'm sure
okay.
Ronnie's going to want to chime in, too. So hang in there with us for just a second, and if you want to ask a question of our guest tonight, Ms. Bernadette Dantley, our number is 909-265-9189. And you can press 1. There's a few people on the line. And if you have a question, please feel free to press 1, and we'll bring you into the conversation. We're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of 2 hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Children eat well and move a lot, and move a lot, and move a lot, eat well and move a lot. 60 minutes of physical activity a day and eating well can help get your child healthy. So keep them active and eating well every day.
Skip a rope Saturday, free tag Friday, tap dance Thursday.
Eat well and move a lot. Get ideas. Get involved. Get going at letsmove.gov. That's letsmove.gov. A message from USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
I got a It's a new beginning. Vaseline Total Moisture is now better than ever, with pure natural and multi-layer moisture, infusing deeply, absorbing quickly, so it feels good and does good for skin. Next Generation Vaseline.
Where does a great night out get even better? At the new Ruby Tuesday, with our freshly made lobster tail and steakhouse sirloin for only $14.99. Enjoy the tempting combination of sweet lobster paired with a perfectly seasoned sirloin, cooked just the way you like it, and served with a free garden bar, all for only $14.99. But join us soon. A pairing this perfect won't last forever. The new Ruby Tuesday.
The best way to tell how great you look is in your jeans. Drop a jean size in 2 weeks with the Special K Challenge. With more delicious options than ever. Jeans don't lie. Go to the new SpecialK.com to design your plan.
Welcome back. You are listening to Professional Style. I'm your host, Kathleen Williams. I'm here with my co-host, Ronnie. Hey, Ronnie.
Hello. I'm here.
And we are talking with our special guest of the evening, Miss Bernadette Dantley, author of Answers Without Penalty, Developing the Young Critical Thinker. Welcome back, Bernadette.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Kathleen and Ronnie, please allow me to make a correction as far as the availability of the book is concerned. The book will not be actually available until the end of this month. So I sincerely apologize, yes. And and your audience can actually reach me at info@dythinker.com, and I can actually send them an email exactly the specific date it will be available. And that's info@dythinker.com.
Okay, we'll definitely get that posted up. So what I wanted to come back to was the last thing that we just talked about, which was, you know, answers without penalty. And if somebody, like you were saying when we at the start of the conversation, was if we have the parents who are very authoritarian and they've kind of brought up their kids this way and diminished the critical thinking in them, that they have to be retrained. So how does someone go about beginning that reframing and retraining so that they can now develop their children as or teachers, how they can now develop their students as critical thinkers?
That's a good question. And if we're talking about the parent, then the parent just has to you know, basically when indeed the child is responding, they have to be responsive, listening, and not shutting the child down. So it's going to require some retraining because normally we parent the way we were parented.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
So it's going to require some effort. Now, back to the very, very young kids, it won't require as much effort. But when you're talking about the older kids, that's going to require a lot of effort. You know, because, and I say the very young kids, because they're so resilient and they're so willing to trust you, you know, so you just have to be very careful. Once you start this other parenting style, be consistent. Be consistent. And if mommy makes a mistake and she goes back to that old parenting style, be willing to talk to the child, you know what, that's not the way we're going to do things anymore. And I apologize. I really want to hear what you have to say.
That's awesome. That's awesome, and that's really just where they begin. Is there anything else that they can do? Will they get tips about that in Answers Without Penalty about how to develop that parenting style? And I would
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Kathleen.
I was going to say that a lot of that is what's in your book, just to kind of Answers Without Penalty.
Yes. One thing a parent can do if they're trying to change their parenting style, have a family night. If you're not having a family night, have a family night. That's a fun night for you to get to know your children, because this is when you start actually incorporating or implementing a family night. This is the time where you'll find out what's going on in school. You'll find out what's going on with the friends that your child has selected. You know, this is the intervention of that bullying, you know, where the bullying has got out of control because your child's not speaking with you. But that family night gives you that opportunity to air out a lot of things, but you make it fun. You want that child to trust you.
Right. That's awesome. That's important. That trust factor is really very key.
It's very important, yes.
It's really very key. And the other thing, too, is critical thinking skills. That's just not, I don't recall, I don't know, Ronnie, if you remember, but I certainly don't recall outside of my science classes and some of the more advanced math classes, very rarely did any of my teachers put any emphasis or importance on critical thinking.
Right. I definitely agree with you. As I've done some reading and some exploring, basically, this critical thinking phenomenon has just really started happening recently. And I think what has provoked this is the global community that we're in. No longer are we in these local communities where we figure just because we're a productive citizen, you know, that's success. You know, we're contributing to our social groups, our local communities, and a lot of information from our ancestors, their beliefs were passed down, whether that information was accurate or not. But that's what we were. That's where we were. But now we're involved in a global community where accuracy is so important. These are the critical thinking skills are going to be what helps us to identify good health care, get us out of financial crisis, have quality education. So that's why this thing is so important.
Yeah, it's vitally important. I think the most emphasis when I really began to hear people talk a lot about critical thinking,
mm-hmm.
and really critical thinking and analytical thinking, which, you know, at
mm-hmm,
one point
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
thought to think they were one and the same. But I really learned the most about that in law school. And prior to, you know, it really was not a conversation that was very prevalent in, you know, like I said, unless we were in math or science classes, that's when they wanted critical thought. When you're in the lab and you have to do an experiment and, you know, critical thinking was vital because you're, you know,
right.
Eliminating that and trying to get to a particular result, you know, organic chemistry and things like that, we were talking about maybe some critical thinking skills. But even then, those were pretty much, if that's probably getting a little too heady,
right.
But I was going to basically it boils down to being authoritarian because you had to come up with the right answer. So, but anyway, but for parents, I'm going to say that maybe there are quite a few parents that really don't even know what critical thinking is.
Right, and I can explain that to them. Basically, critical thinking is the ability to apply reason and logic to familiar and unfamiliar ideas and situations for its potential usefulness and accuracy.
Give that one more time.
Okay. It's the ability to apply reason and logic to familiar and unfamiliar ideas and situations for its potential usefulness and accuracy. And I'll tell you this. Now, there is no one precise definition of critical thinking. Okay,
uh-huh.
But we would all agree that it's good thinking. But I
uh-huh.
think the reason why we did not hear anything about it in the past, and even to some people now, it's like, what is it? Because it's so abstract. I can't tell you step by step, okay, do this, and you got a critical thinker.
Right.
We can't do that. I can tell you things that will help you to develop the critical thinking skills.
Right.
But I can't pinpoint, you know, 1, 2, 3, this is definitely it. No.
Yep. And that's why this is so important, because for parents who don't really understand it, it's hard then to develop it. So if they weren't
yes.
taught in a way of critical thinking, how do you get your children in that framework of even valuing critical thinking to understand that critical thinking will then not only make them a better citizen, but also have them produce more favorable results on all of these standardized tests that we bring it right back to. But
yes.
and it's more so than the exams, Bernadette, from what I'm hearing and from my experiences, is you know, the icing on the cake is the SAT and the LSAT and the, you know, the GREs and the GMATs and all. That's the icing on the cake. But the most beautiful thing from a critical thinker is the ability to be able to interact with other people and have a tremendous amount of professional growth to be able to deal with, like you said earlier, whether it's finances or relationships or parenting or driving, you know, whatever it is, critical thinking is going to be extremely valuable for you.
Very, very, very important. I don't think I've mentioned this, Kathleen and Ronnie, but the book is also in Spanish. And it's not just because we have a large Spanish community. I had a neighbor come over to ask me to help her child with the home assignment. And that started me thinking because, you know, we're supposed to be geniuses to our children. There's an age where children just think we know everything, and I like that. And so I said, well, she's going to miss out on that because she doesn't know English. So how can I give her back what she's probably going to miss out on? That's the parent I'm talking about. How can I give the parent back what she's going to miss out on because her child's learning English and she doesn't know English? She knows Spanish. And so that's when I said, you know what, this critical thinking book has to be written in Spanish so that mother can be the smartest person that child, that she should be at the ages that the child should think a parent should be. And that's another reason for the Spanish version of the Answers Without Penalty, Developing a Critical Thinker.
I love it. I am going to just go ahead and speak into existence your book in many other languages, because around the globe it's essential that we have critical thinkers. So I think that, you know, this is fabulous. I'm so happy to have you with us tonight and talk about this most powerful book, you know. And this incredible conversation, I think, is a really very valuable conversation and definitely enhances our professional style. It definitely enhances our professional style. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, as a professional individual, you're going to want to not only be a critical thinker yourself so you can pass it on, but definitely being able to share with your children the skills that will help them to become professional, be able to be successful on their standardized tests and in their schooling. I think it's just really incredible. So I thank you for writing this very necessary piece of work, and congratulations on it. I look forward to the release date and whatever we can do here to help you promote it and get the word out. We'd love to do that.
Well, thank you so much, Kathleen and Ronnie. Thanks for having me on your show. I really enjoyed it. I hope that I've been a help to your audience, because you both have been a help to me.
Oh, definitely. Well, and you know what? We should talk, too, because the fact that you work with athletes, we should talk some more, rather, you know, that you've worked with athletes a lot, and this and your book is going to be extremely instrumental for athletes, kind of works hand in hand with the book that I wrote. I'm sure Judith told you about that, Single Mothers and New Fathers, for the single mom in particular, raising an athlete. And while it's not talking about the critical thinking in this way, it is in another way, because it's a whole give and take between mother and child in the sports world, and the mom being able to listen to the child. So we're hand in hand on this. So I'm really excited about that. So let's get together offline and compare some notes, and I'll get one of my books in your hands as well to see how we might be able to do a little something together.
I appreciate it. Definitely appreciate it.
That sounds great. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to author, professor, trainer, educator, and more, Bernadette Dantley. She has blessed us with her presence tonight and talked with us extensively about her book, Answers Without Penalty, Developing the Young Critical Thinker, which will be out very soon, and she's going to let us know when that date is, and we'll certainly be posting that. I'll have it up on my Facebook page, put it up on Twitter. You can reach out to us here at Professional Style, or you can contact Bernadette directly at info@dythinker.com. So, Bernadette, I want to thank you again for being with us tonight. It was a pleasure having you. Just great conversation.
Oh, same here. Thank you, Kathleen and Ronnie. Really, it's my pleasure, truly.
You're welcome. We're going to take a quick 2-second break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned, and we have a whole lot more information that we're going to share with you real quick. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Esprinet News.
I want to get the language right tonight.
Don't ever let anybody tell you that your efforts don't matter.
This is not a war zone. These are unarmed people.
Politicians and commentators.
Don't let anybody take your man.
Did I remind you that I've done this before?
Welcome to Esprinet News, Spotlight in Black History. Referred to as the soul of Egypt, the Great Sphinx or her Imhotep was built in Kemet. Kemet, the land of the blacks,
yes,
the indigenous name for the North African nation now called Egypt. The Imhotep is the largest and oldest monument ever sculpted from a single rock. Its head is a person and the body of a reclined lion. Her Imhotep faces the rising sun and is strategically positioned at the foot of the Great Pyramid, which provides a clue to its symbolic meaning. Many myths have been created around the statue. Today, I'll set the record straight. The statue integrates the essence of man and animal in such a way that it expresses the divine relationship between the two. Symbolically, the body of the beast represents the animal nature which exists in man, and the lion exemplifies the royalty and power of the divine spirit that exists in lower physical form. The head of the man symbolizes the intelligence of the mind, which must be cultivated in order to elevate consciousness to a higher spiritual state so that it may become divine. Metaphorically speaking, it's the suppression of the lower animal nature and the refinement of the thought process that leads to the spiritual evolution of man. Spiritually speaking, it's only by conquering the beast within that one is truly capable of knowing God. I'm Jerome Esprit for Esprinet News. This is our Spotlight in Black History on ACN.
Welcome back. You are listening to Professional Style. I'm here with my co-host and sister, Ronnie, and we just had a fabulous conversation with Bernadette Dantley, author of Answers Without Penalty, Developing the Young Critical Thinker. Ronnie, was that a great conversation?
Awesome. Really, really awesome. And she was so well-informed, and, you know, her resolution was just off the charts. I loved it.
Yeah, me too. Love it. And, definitely hang out. You know, stay in touch with us here on Professional Style so we can let you know when the book drops, because you definitely want to pick up a copy of it. And also, you would I highly recommend my book also, Single Mother, the New Father, about sports. Single mom, so definitely, this is great conversation. So I wanted to just move on real quick to Ronnie. Did you have your rave for this evening that you wanted to talk about something?
Well, I didn't really have a rave. No, I do. I actually do have a rave,
uh-huh.
And I had a little bit of a rant. And I won't call it a rant, just a little bit of a, I'm a little puzzled about something. I don't know if you heard that The View is starting to come apart at the seams, or maybe I'm just it's one of my favorite shows. I've been watching it for as many years as it's been on TV. And now I heard that Joy Behar is leaving. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, one of the View co-hosts, is not going to be renewed. Her contract is not going to be renewed when it expires this summer. And Barbara Walters is thinking about leaving.
It's like, okay, so Whoopi Goldberg and Sherry Shepherd?
That's the only two that weren't discussed.
They weren't discussed, so we don't know what's going to happen with them. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. We don't know what's going to happen with them. But I was curious to, I'm curious to understand what has happened to it. You know, did it just overstay its welcome or, you know, because it was a pioneer show when they started it. You know, it was really a prototype. And now every single table has a million people sitting around talking. You know, prior to them, it was a show with a host, maybe a co-host here and there. But basically, you know, Oprah set the standard. Before that, it was Phil Donahue, and way back in the Sally Jesse Raphaels and the Montels and, you know, for as many years as talk shows have been on. It's been a talk show host. And then they started this roundtable discussion, which really has been, you know, they brought some serious issues to the forefront, and then they had some arguments that were spicy and that kind of thing. So I don't know. Now they have one on Channel 2. It's called The Talk. Holly Robinson Pete was one of those hosts. And they bumped her off after one season. I don't know exactly what happened. And then, then they came up with that show, The Doctors, where they have all those doctors that sit on and speak. And then Wendy Williams sometimes has people come on and discuss hot topics. And so, you know, I'm wondering if the market just got so crowded because Barbara Walters, that is her show. She's the executive producer of the show. How does that happen? Where does she go? I mean, how does she leave and what happens to the show if she leaves? I just wanted to, you know, just put it out there. I was curious. And then does that leave Whoopi Goldberg standing alone, you know? I'm curious. Does that leave Whoopi as the right?
As a woman standing. Well, right now I'm going to bring in our fabulous consultant and political strategist, host of the SpreeNet News, Mr. Jerome. Jerome, hey. Thanks
hey
for
guys.
Being
here. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Just keep it quiet. That's all.
Oh, I wanted to know, how do you feel about the View?
I don't feel any way about the View, but I can tell you this. All right, so the firing or who left for Joy Behar resigning or leaving. The story is that she's negotiating with CNN, and you know for the last couple of years she was with Headline News. She had her own show there. I think that one was canceled, and then she went on another one of the CNN affiliates. And so since they're revamping CNN, I think she's getting an offer over there. And as far as Elizabeth Hasselbeck is concerned, she's fired or they're not going to renew her contract because they were saying their ratings people, whoever, she was just bad ratings. People weren't watching the show because of her. She's not very popular, and she really does take this really conservative Fox News thing, and it worked for a little bit because Bill Getty and apparently Barbara Walters are pretty conservative. That's why they brought Bill O'Reilly on and all this other stuff. But, you know, it is for the long term of ratings. Their popularity has been going down because people don't like that. That's why Fox News is changing. You know, so you can't, I think what Elizabeth was doing, she was toeing the line. I don't know if the president, you know, I didn't see his birth certificate either. That stuff stopped being funny probably a year and a half ago, and it just kind of caught up to them. Really, I mean, her being conservative, it doesn't make her smart. I mean, I thought it was disrespectful that the president first lady comes on and she's wearing short skirts, crossing her legs, and, oh, no, you know, and then she's kissing up to the president. After all this, she doesn't like him. So I think when they field tested it, when they started doing the rating season and they started evaluating which one of these people who you like and who do you hate and who would you not watch the show if they were there and those kind of questions, Elizabeth rates really, really low. I mean, she's not smart. I don't think anybody's learned anything from her. So she's not adding that. She's adding the controversy. So you would think that controversy sells, but it really doesn't. When your controversy is packaged in you lying and towing a line. So when you do talking points, it just wasn't working for them anymore.
Well, I have another point of view as well. And this probably is going to sound really... Jerome, you may want to close your ears because this is going to really sound real girly, real cheeky, and real just totally... I won't say, I'm going to say it. It's just going to sound real visual.
Okay,
I'm just
let
going
it go.
There. I'm going to let it fly.
Uh-huh.
They're
Uh-oh.
Not cute.
Oh, Lord.
What, the show, they're not cute? No.
No.
I think what?
They're not. Their visual is really tough. Okay. I'm not saying that their faces are not cute. That's not what I mean. It's not, they don't give you a good visual eye. You know, they came in with and replaced grumpy old Regis with the magnificent looking Michael Strahan. So if you wake up in the morning and you see him, you know, and if you go back, I don't know if you watched the Channel 7 Good Morning Americas or whatever, but for the most part, you have a good-looking cast there in the morning. Robin Roberts, with her illnesses and all that, she comes back glowing. She's gorgeous. You know, even with hair, no hair, whatever, she's gorgeous. You know, they have a good-looking morning visual. Then we come with the replacement for Regis, which is a very, very strong, you know, powerful, athletic African-American man, and he looks fantastic. He's immaculate. Then you switch over there. You have Wendy Williams in the morning, who is knocked down, drag out, even though people don't, you know, she rubs people the wrong way, but she does rub them the right way. She comes on gorgeous every morning. You know, she sets trends, and she really hits hard with the topics. And then you get to The View, and yeah. I don't know what Whoopi Goldberg wears.
Well, but you're talking a difference in audience, too, right? And so.
Yeah. A lot of people have said that, too. The difference in audiences. But you also have to realize that people are visual for the most part. They really are. And TV is visual. You
well,
know,
wait
and
a
I guess this
Robert
is my
Walters
view,
hasn't been
my
cute
opinion.
Since,
it's my opinion. That's why I said you may want to close your ears. But I watch TV for a lot of different reasons, and not just to listen. Like I'll close the sound just to get just energy. And a lot of days, you know, they just don't look great. I watched Joy when she was on CNN. She was on HLN Headline News, her show. It was really good because it was a takeaway from the screaming memes that they have on from early evening till nighttime, midnight, with the Nancy Grace, you know, screaming, yelling, and now they brought Dr. Drew in, you know, and he's yelling and screaming, and I didn't even think he was going to yell and scream, but he's there, and he knocked Joy off for that. I'm hoping she'll get another show like her show because it was really interesting. She
it
brought
was
in
good.
A lot of beautiful. And it gave it a nice light, air, you know, airy, you know, feeling for the evening. But she still wasn't visually good. She's not ugly or anything like that. I don't mean that. But visual, like, needed to be upgraded. That's just my opinion. Like, maybe change her hair sometimes, you know. And Whoopi, I just, oh, my God. I love her face and everything. I love her mind. I love what comes out of her mouth, everything. I love everything about her, but I don't know what she wears every day. Oh, my God. That's my rant, and my rage.
Well, you're listening to Professional Professional Style. This is your host, Kathleen Williams. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan, and political strategist, consultant, Jerome Esprit, and we are talking about what's new. And, Ronnie, I think that, For The View, it was never my favorite show.
Yeah, I know. You never really ever watched it.
Yeah, I watched it sometimes. I watched when the First Lady was on there.
Yeah.
I think they pissed me off that day, I think, when she was on there as well. I watched it when they had some of the rappers on there, and I watched when the same conservative woman was melting in the seat when the rappers were on. You know, a lot of the rappers would come on and Elizabeth would turn to mush. Barbara Walters, too.
Yeah, they love that Snoop Dogg. Ooh, boy. You let Snoop Dogg come on there. I'm telling you. I don't know if it's put on, but
they lose their minds.
LL was on there, and I thought they were going to have to shut the cameras off.
Yeah. So it's interesting, but you bring up a really interesting topic, especially here for Professional Style. You know, how much does your style impact your career? You know, and Whoopi Goldberg has been a master at just kind of maintaining her line. You know, basically she has a style. And she does not change it for anybody for any reason. So whether she is hosting the Grammys or, not the Grammys, I mean the Academy Awards or whatever it is, she does not change her style. That's who
she
is.
Wait a minute. She did. When she hosted the Academy Awards, she had on a gown and she looked fixed up. She had her hair done. And she worked out because at one point she I don't know about now, I can't really get a feel for what's going on with her physique, but her physique was awesome.
Well,
so
which
I don't
time
know.
Was this, though? Because I know she's hosted it more than once, and when I saw her hosted, you know, she never looks bad. She always looks great, but it's just, you know, she's got a style. That's Whoopi.
Yeah.
And you just kind of know that Whoopi is Whoopi, and you just come to expect her style, which is not going to be, you know, high fashion, high glamour or anything like that. And that's just her style. And she brings that to The View, and it has worked for her.
It's worked for her. But back to Elizabeth Hasselbeck and her irritation, because Jerome is right. She's extremely irritating. But to me, it seems like since the president has won the second election, she has been less and less vocal with her conservative views. So I don't know if that's because she sees that they're going to replace her or she saw that they were going to replace her or she just changed her views. But
well, they told her to cut it out.
Yeah, but she's been an irritant for as long as she's been on the show. They did have her there for that, you know, opposing view. She said a lot of disrespectful things about President Obama. A couple of weeks ago, she made some ridiculous comment because he went and played golf with Tiger Woods, which I think has done wonders for Tiger's career. It's helped his stroke. Yeah, he's doing really good today. But I didn't understand her point of view. What do you mean he can't go out and play golf? You know, you're not playing. If you're playing golf, then you're not. You know, you're not doing your job. Too many holes of golf means you're obviously not doing your job. And it was just a ridiculous comment. But the bottom line is she just doesn't like the president because she thought it made her popular. Because
Jerome, I think you had like the best comment about the number of days that the president took for vacation. I just would love for you to share that here.
Oh, you mean that, like the overall vacation days?
Yeah, I love
that. What you're asking?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. So, during his average days per year, Reagan had 60.5. Bush Senior had 136 days a year, and George W. Bush had 127.5 days he took off a year. And President Obama took 32.
Wow.
Exactly.
127 days?
Yeah, that is during 9/11, the Gulf War. Like, that is all of that. He had 127, and he averaged a year 127. But his last year, I think he had probably closer to 170 off for that whole year.
He checked out.
He didn't check out. He always checked out. That didn't just happen in one year. Bush was never engaged. It was run by Cheney and all them other fools. That's the point. That is exactly the point, right? And so what happens if you hand over government to Republicans, they put people in there and just run roughshod over government. But when Democrats are there, we expect the Democrat presidents to rein in all of the departments. Bush Senior, Reagan, those guys did not do that. That's why we had people smuggling marijuana on Air Force One during Reagan times. We had Iran-Contra. We had all of these things that people were actually pardoned by George H. Bush because of the corruption during Reagan. There was a lot of people pardoned. If I had to guess, I would say at least 15, and then they had some more that just got really light jail sentences. But a lot of people got arrested under Reagan.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So that is that's nothing new. That's a perception. Like, that is how we like to view running a country, is to tell everybody what to do, and we just take everybody's lunch money. So that's a perception. So
okay, I got one more before Kathleen shuts us off. What do you guys think about Mr. Rodman going to North Korea?
Dennis Rodman going to Korea?
Yeah.
Oh, I can care less. It has nothing to do with anything in particular. I don't know why it's a news story. You're free to go to anywhere you want to go.
But then he's trying to get the president to talk to whoever.
Wait a minute, how can you get the president to do something? Do you think we can talk on this, your network, and say, the president, you should stop by my church on Sunday? Right? It's only a news story because it's sensationalized because of him being an NBA star, but technically it shouldn't mean anything.
A crazy
It doesn't matter.
A former NBA star, he's always been radical. He goes to a less than friendly country. You know, he sits with the guy and I guess they talk basketball, they talk shop. Then he comes back and now he's threatening an attack.
Well, see that
a nuclear attack?
Well, you're kind of talking to the wrong person for this. This is the trick is that we have to watch how information is filtered in this country. Now, Hugo Chavez just passed. And, you know, they had everyone there from Jesse Jackson to whomever, Sean Penn, and those guys were big supporters because, you know, people don't remember during Katrina, it was Chavez through Citgo, which is their national oil company, Citgo. in the United States, their U.S. subsidiary, that they lowered gas prices and all this other stuff for people in New Orleans because Chavez said black people wasn't getting stuff in this country. So
right.
He actually sent money to New Orleans.
Yeah.
So when you don't know that much about, you know, South America, you won't know why they're yelling that the United States is an imperialist, because the United States have actually taken out democracies and placed in dictators because the dictators were holding U.S. policy. The democracies wasn't. And Chavez was elected again recently. They have six-year
right.
presidential terms, but they vote. That's a democracy. And
right.
he hated the U.S. But he didn't hate all American citizens. He didn't like the policies of the government. That's a big
okay, but now we're talking about North Korea, so.
No, your point is that we should hate North Korea because they said something bad about the U.S. But I am saying to you is that those are war games, and, you know, I'm really careful about putting that kind of stuff out. I don't. Rodman is not a spokesman for the U.S., but you should be able to go anywhere you want to. You're free to travel the planet if you like.
No, nobody said he shouldn't go. I'm just asking you guys what you thought about it. What did you think about it? Because he goes there, and then people are like, what in the world is he doing over there? Okay, you're free to go anywhere you want to go. And like he sits and he chews the cud with the guy. They have a good time. He says exactly what you said. He just invited me over there. He likes basketball. I love basketball. We sit around. We have a good time. Blah, blah, blah. That's it. I'm back. Okay, but now... unless I'm reading the news incorrectly, they have just, because of sanctions that have been made upon their nuclear program, they've threatened to launch nuclear missiles at the United States. Okay, so they show all these different possible ways that they can't get the job done because, A, they don't have a nuclear missile that can reach us or whatever. But I'm just asking what – I know we're supposed to not hate them, but we do.
No,
the United States
and
North
don't.
Korea don't seem to be best friends.
That's the point, right? So technically we're supporting South Korea, so North Korea doesn't like us. And so that's where that international stuff goes awry. I mean, we hated Gaddafi for no good reason. If we knew the history of Libya, black people shouldn't hate them. But the issue generally, and he's offered many a times being that he ran the African Union at some point and had the largest man-made water irrigation project in the world known to man. He pumped water into areas that was just desert, Gaddafi did. And so when people start saying things about folks because we as a government don't like them, you have to think back to our brainwashing with the Bushes, with, you know, Cheney and those guys, and Reagan lying just to get us to step on the necks of somebody. I mean, we don't like Cote d'Ivoire right now, the Ivory Coast, and we encourage the doggone coup in their country.
Okay.
Right? And
yeah.
It's just because their interests was kind of self-preservation as an African nation. So I'm really not quick to jump on any national or any politics that comes out of our press because I don't know. I couldn't give you an educated guess on that, but I don't make judgments on that stuff. That's just I actually understand politics enough to know when somebody is trying to give you an impression, you can't dislike somebody when you don't know why you don't dislike them. So we're kind of brainwashed in our media just to say, hey, the enemy of the United States or this, and we tag stuff just so that we have an impression. Everybody says, forget the United States. You know why? Because that will get you world news. Whether they have the ability to hit us or not, nobody's going to take the U.S. Like Bill Clinton said, he was here one year at the State Fair, and he was at the podium. He said, yep, somebody hit the towers. But nobody's going to take this country. Nobody's going to land on the ground here. You can believe that there will be milk at the grocery store tomorrow. Right? He just said, right. I mean, think about it. He had national security clearance as president. He's like, nobody's going to set foot. Now, they might blow up a base or, you know, terrorist stuff happens, but trust me, your way of life is not changing because of somebody overseas. But Republicans make us think that we're in fear all day by stuff that happens so far away from us. It's not even funny.
Well, see, that's what I was waiting for you to mention, because Romney, that was his, wasn't that his campaign?
Yes, because that used to work. That works with old white folks.
His campaign ran on North Korea launching a missile. And I, like I was always telling people, they've been launching a missile and blowing up the Brooklyn Bridge since I've been born. They've been blowing up the subway every summer of my life.
Yeah, since Dr. King, just like forever. But
right.
Wow.
Remember the names they called Dr. King and
right.
Professor Angela Davis and all of them. Called them names.
That's right. That's right. Oh, wow. Well, we've had we've been around the world on our on our show tonight. What a great conversation. And there's definitely more to always talk about. So fortunately, we, you know, and thanks be to God, we have next week where I will have something that I would love to talk about next week. Mm-hmm. We'll bring that into the conversation, and hopefully you will join us. Jerome and Ronnie, you know, it'll be a little bit about, and maybe we should bring it up tomorrow as well. So anyway, a good friend of mine driving home from shopping was pulled over by the police, and that's when she found, for nothing, for no good reason, and that's when she found out that her license had been suspended or something for something that she did not know anything about, and they put her in jail. Upstanding citizen put her in jail, and, you know, it just kind of reminded me about a lot of what's happening in certain neighborhoods. When the police are ready to just start putting people in jail, they're just ready to start doing it, and not criminal, you know, obviously not criminal. So it's something that I wanted to just talk about, because that's certainly something that will decrease your professional style, you know. So what can be done to, how do you protect yourself, one? And two, is there anything that could be done to change? You know, I just love to review that and, you know, make sure everybody.
I believe that there's a war on women, African American women drivers. That's just me.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay, well, we'll be talking about a little bit of that next week. So join us next week on Professional Style, next week, Sunday evening at 8 p.m. The call-in number is 909-265-9189. And be sure that tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock, you are not doing anything except listening to Black on Black Crime right here on F. Kathleen Network. You can call in and definitely jump in on the conversation. It will be awesome. The host of that program is Jerome and Finesse. And Jerome, tell everybody what Black on Black Crime is all about.
Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze black people in areas they won't consider white folks or anyone else. Black on Black.
Yes, and I'm telling you, it's a great show. So to Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Ask Kathleen Network.
Hey, you know what tomorrow we're talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. Tell them what we're talking about tomorrow.
You can tell them. Turns out.
Somebody tell us.
It's Terrence Howard, the actor. He said something really kind of foul about Oprah, so we're going to have...
Who?
We're going to ask the question if he had a black-on-black crime against Oprah.
Who?
That's our main topic tomorrow.
I didn't hear who you said it was.
Terrence Howard.
Oh, him.
I told you, Jerome. Remember I told you? I was like, everybody's going to say, oh, him. Yes, Terrence Howard. So tomorrow on Ask Kathleen Network at 2 p.m. with Jerome and Finesse, Black on Black Crime, every Monday at 2 p.m. Join in. It's an incredible show. It's really great. And on Thursday night, you can find Jerome on Esprit Net News Radio. And that's right here on Blog Talk Radio, Esprit Net News Radio. And the host, of course, is Jerome Esprit. That comes on Thursday evening at 11 p.m. So, thanks again for joining us. It was an awesome conversation. Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you, Jerome, for being here tonight.
Thank you for being here, too.
And thank you to our special guest for the evening. She did a great job, Bernadette Dantley, author extraordinaire. And we will let you know when her book drops. So, everybody, have a phenomenal week this week. Get ready for spring, and hopefully you turn your clock ahead so you're on time for work tomorrow. All right, everybody, have a great day, great week. See you next week here, right here on Professional Style.